This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 18th of December 2015. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 17th of December 2015, which this week has been edited by Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are Arts Complex Concern, Trusts Chief in refusal to quit, and cafe debt £594,000. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
Arts Complex Concern. Residents have voiced concerns over a proposed arts complex at Winchester College. Peter Simmons College had told locals of their plans to build just off Hatherley Road and have already received backlash from the community. Locals say the new building will be three stories high and will damage the appearance and character of the area. One resident, who didn't want to be named, said, "It is a visual intrusion. It sets a precedent for more development along the boundaries." The activity of the college is at the moment mainly on the other side of the site from us, and this plan brings it right into our homes. The building, it is claimed, will be open to the public and will funnel more students along Cranworth Road, creating a safety problem. At present, the road gets busy at the start and end of the day, with students travelling to and from the train station. The length of the construction is another issue, worrying locals with noise and road closures expected. However, residents say that the application, once submitted, will face problems due to other planning decisions, where the council has recognised the open character of the college grounds as an asset in a built-up area. Another resident, who didn't want to be named, said they felt that the college had not informed enough people. They added that the siting of the building, close to Hatherley Road, was apparently the planner's favoured option, although the City of Winchester Trust would have preferred it to be sited within the present campus. Talks have already been held with the community regarding this proposed site, and designers TKL Architects has said that more meetings are to be scheduled to iron out any issues. However, during the consultations, locals were unimpressed by the unrealistic designs that had been put forward by the college and made their own using Photoshop to place the building in a more realistic setting. Stephen Carville, principal, said, "A proposal for a new arts building is still very much in draft and we are consulting widely, both internally and externally, prior to submitting to planning. The building would replace existing older accommodation and would bring all art and design courses under one roof."
Trust's chief in refusal to quit. A health chief executive is refusing to resign after a damning report said her trust failed to investigate the unexpected deaths of more than 1,000 people. Katrina Percy of Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust criticised the leaked NHS England report and apologised, but said she would not stand down. Findings in the report say that the Trust insufficiently examined the deaths of mental health and learning disability patients within the past 4 years. Health Secretary Jeremy Hunt told the House of Commons the situation was, quote, "totally and utterly unacceptable," unquote, issued an apology to families and pledged to bring in Ofsted-style ratings. The Southampton father of a man who died whilst under the Trust's care claimed he was told the death of a patient was, quote, "like an airline losing baggage," unquote. Richard West's son, David, died at the age of 28 following a long history of mental health problems after being under the care of Southern Health. Mr. West said that following his son's death, he became concerned about the Trust's treatment of his case, but said that when he raised the issues with them, he was ignored. He said, "There seemed to be themes that they were mentioning on my son's report, which were also occurring in the reports they were writing on similar deaths. I had a meeting with a Trust member, and during the conversation we had, the analogy he used was that they were a bit like British Airways and it was like losing baggage. It was a bit difficult, and that's what they had to cater with. I really couldn't believe what the person was saying to me. It was harrowing." Southern Health runs hospitals across Hampshire, including Melbury Lodge in Winchester.
Cafe debt, £594,000. One of Winchester's most popular cafes was liquidated, owing an alleged £500,000 in unpaid tax, the Hampshire Chronicle can reveal. Ginger 2 wound up earlier this year with debts of £594,000, mostly owed to Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs, company records show. Its directors have rebranded the St. Thomas Street Tea Room and continue to trade in a new company called So Winchester. Jane and Mark Stamen of Meridum Lane, Hursley, are adamant HMRC's debt assessment can be overturned, Ginger 2's liquidator said. Mrs. Stamen, 47, branded the tax claims absolute rubbish. She said, "This is the most outrageous thing I've heard in my life." She declined further comment when approached by the Chronicle on Tuesday. The documents from Companies House revealed Ginger 2 Limited also owed commercial suppliers a combined £14,000. Furious suppliers claim that the company paid its bills late for years. At least one is considering legal action. One supplier, who asked not to be named, said, "We have to badger them all the time, and then they get quite irritable about it. We've had all kinds of excuses, like a cheque got lost in the bottom of my handbag." When Ginger 2 Limited was liquidated in October, it owed around £289,000 in corporation tax, £275,000 in VAT, and £16,000 in PAYE fees, the files show. The six commercial partners allegedly owed money include Winchester firms Char Teas and Chompers Catering, coffee maker Matthew Algy, accountants Northover Bennett, Maidenhead's Handmade Cake Company and Heavenly Smoothies from Dorset are also listed as out of pocket. "It's a real nightmare to get money out of them," the director of one former supplier said last week on the condition of anonymity. "They've not made any effort to pay any of it back. I've been here for 30 years, and if someone's in trouble, I'm the first one to try and help them. When someone doesn't seem to have learnt from their mistakes, that's when I'm really not happy." Mrs. Stamen declined to comment on the allegations from the suppliers. So Winchester, frequently cited alongside its predecessor as amongst Winchester's best eateries, occupies a Grade 2 listed building with Georgian windows just off the High Street. It is at the forefront of the city's independent business community. Mrs. Stamen led battles against the council clampdown on advertising boards in 2009 and 2012. It is unclear from the available public records over how long the alleged debts accrued. One supplier told the Chronicle that it had started receiving payments from Mr. and Mrs. Stamen. Liquidator Simon Lowes of Aston's JWD said, "The directors are adamant that these assessments can be overturned." HMRC declined to comment when asked whether it was taking action or if any of the tax had been repaid. A spokesman said, "We always try to recover as much money as we can from what people owe." The Stamens also run Ginger Gelato, the dessert shop across the road, and are directors of a company called Licks Gelato. They have no other business interests listed by Companies House.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Buckley, Monica Buckley, née Poole, on the 10th of December, aged 85. Dorbar, Roger Dorbar, I'm afraid there are no details given about his date of death or age. Dowling, Gillian Ann Dowling, known as Jill, on the 8th of December, aged 79, at Abbeygate Nursing Home. Fremantle, Patricia Margaret Mary Fremantle, known as Pat, in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 11th of December. Garrett, John Frank Garrett, known as Johnny, on the 13th of November, aged 75. Morgan, David Leonard Morgan, at home on the 9th of December, aged 78. Pickett, Despina Pickett, known as Poppy, at home, aged 91. She died on the 5th of December. Roland, Patricia Roland, née Lewis, on the 7th of December, aged 98. Thomas, Violet Thomas, known as Vi, née Farmer, in hospital on the 4th of December, aged 91. Wright, Nan Tate Wright, known as Nancy, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 88. Next, we have Christian comment.
And this week it is written by Rosemary Baker, and she entitles it Unexpected Life-Changing Events. Climate change and the recent agreement in Paris, signed up to by 200 nations, has been in the news headlines. Governments have signed on behalf of us all, and policies and laws can indeed influence our actions. But whether as individuals we actually change our behaviour in this regard is largely up to the individual. Do people change? As a psychiatrist, I know they do. Sometimes they change for the better. With age comes maturity, and this can actually be seen on EEGs. To put it in everyday language, that's a brainwave recording in some people diagnosed with personality disorders. On the other hand, sometimes the opposite happens. Traits or weaknesses we show as young people actually worsen or become more pronounced as we grow older, particularly in later life. Sometimes people are changed by life events. Obviously, losses, bereavements and accidents are expected to be life-changing, but sometimes experiences that one least expect to have an impact can also be life-changing. Although not on the scale of going into space, as in the case of Major Tim Peake, I recently had what I call a light bulb moment. A Damascus experience, as happened to St. Paul, was a religious revelatory moment. Mine, on the other hand, was about making a decision about our future location and the decluttering and subsequent downsizing that will be necessary for this to happen. Hythe Public Library may not compare to the city of Damascus, but that's when and where the light dawned on me regarding this decision. Of course, I will have to action a change in behaviour. The man who was stabbed on the Underground in London probably had his life changed. The man who called out, "You ain't no Muslim, bro," also did, but is now afraid of consequent reprisals. Sheikha Amer, the Briton held at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba and now released and back in Britain, might have been expected to be full of hate after his experience. Instead, he has told the Mail on Sunday that Muslims who support terror attacks have no right to live in this country, and demanded would-be shahidis to leave. People are changing all the time. The charity Crisis at Christmas tells stories of homeless people, sometimes with other problems such as addiction, who have had their lives changed by a bed and a meal at Christmas. Charles Dickens tells the story in The Christmas Carol of the change that was promulgated in Ebenezer Scrooge by the visit of the three Christmas spirits. The kindness of strangers can have similarly far-reaching effects. Christians believe that Jesus Christ can change lives, and not just at Christmas, although that's a very good place to start.
Next, we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. You can email letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 9AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We just have 8 letters this week, so smaller crop than usual. Perhaps everybody's busy writing their Christmas cards, and there is no particular theme to the letters, so we'll start off with the first letter,
which I like, and its title is Let's Have a Big Shopping Centre. Sir, I would like to congratulate the City Council, as advised by their officers, on sticking to their guns and not being influenced by any namby-pamby arguments over Silver Hill. Yes, let's have a big shopping centre. What do those academics know anyway about internet shopping? Nothing beats lots of retail space. As for the notion of gerrymandering by moving in rich people, so what? No one will take action and it brings money to the city. As for this nonsense of climate change and leaving floodplains to soak up excess water, total rubbish. So what if a few people get their feet wet occasionally? Let's build, build and build. The bigger the better. The more retail footprint, the cheaper to build. This will make money for those that matter, and no one will notice the difference until it's too late. Yes, let's have a new Lewis's store and compete with Basingstoke and Southampton. That was written very vigorously by Peter Lamb, Northington, Alsford.
Yes, no irony in that letter, obviously. this next letter is written by Catherine Morris, and it's headed Land Protection. The garrison ground, 13.7 acres at Bar End, owned by Tesco and not for sale, has until now been designated countryside and open space. As such, its value is between £10,000 and £12,000 per acre. The City Council has stated that this recreational area is not building land, but claim Tesco are demanding millions for it. Winchester's local plan, part two, has removed the labelling of the garrison ground as open space, and this is worrying, as it is therefore no more protected than any other piece of countryside around the settlement boundary. Think Pitt Vale. It is listed in the Strategic Housing Land Availability Assessment. Miller Homes expressed an interest in this land and met 3 times with the council in 2013. If the council's intention is for the garrison ground to remain as a recreational facility, they need to give a clear message to Tesco and Miller Homes and to any other developer that this land is for sport and recreational use by our community, and mark that clearly on the local plan when it is finalised in the new year. Readers wishing to see the maps can visit the council's website and comment at lpp2@winchester.gov.uk by midday on December the 21st. Catherine Morris, Carmen's Lane, Compton.
plan contention written by John Cranfield. Sir, I feel I have to write in regarding the local plan. New Alsford and recent articles in the Chronicle on jobs leaving the town if the Dean is redeveloped. There are a number of quotes relating to the number of jobs in the Dean, and apparently this would be a loss to the town if the businesses leave due to not being able to relocate to more modern buildings which would replace the premises which are currently underused at the Dean. I also have to take issue with the assumption that the town is split or is completely against the local plan policies which have been drawn up by the City Council. The Council has worked with the local community, interest groups and the Town Council to come up with a sensible set of policies now contained in the pre-submission document for LPP2. Not quite sure what LPP is, but still, I think something to do with the local planning. It's no surprise that the recent exhibition by Alfred Holmes has had support from a percentage of the town. It does beg the question, why was there an exhibition in the town to gather opinion regarding this planned 65-house development? I am wondering whether this was an exercise to support Alfred Holmes' consultation to the City Council regarding their pre-submission document of the LPP2. 5 years ago, the same landowner and another developer offered to build the rugby pitches and give extra land to the town for use as public open space, and as the allotments in return for 25-house development on the same patch of land. This was rejected by the town as being unacceptable. What has changed that 65 houses is more acceptable now? What is being offered in return for this increased number of houses? As a Nursery Road resident, I am in favour of the City Council's policies which will inform the planning process up until 2031. New Alsford cannot afford to not have a plan in light of the new devolution plan for the Hampshire Super Authority. We need to have a robust plan in place next year. John Cranfield, Nursery Road, Alsford.
Keith Webb writes about parking madness. Sir, all parking has been suspended in the Broadway for several days now, displaying utter madness at such a busy time. The situation is not helped by the recent closure of a multi-storey car park, quote, for structural reasons, unquote. Who takes it upon himself or themselves to make such stupid decisions at a peak shopping time and when we have the extra traffic caused by the Christmas market and the ice rink? I have just telephoned the City Council and ascertained the nonsensical reason, quote, that more park and ride buses are operating and it is so that they can get through, unquote. Had no one given thought to the extra congestion that would be caused by cars milling around looking for somewhere to park for a few minutes? The vast majority of our out-of-touch councillors live well outside the city and are insulated from parking problems. Their free parking is one of the perks of the job. They apparently do not care, or may I say, do not have the guts to monitor decisions taken by our unelected paid officials. Having lived in Winchester for more than 80 years and worked here for nearly 60, I have never had much regard for the quality of those we elect to represent us. Many of the decisions they do make are flawed, and we paddle along from crisis to crisis, seemingly utterly rudderless. The Silver Hill development seems to be on its knees, and I have never learned why or who decided to make Henderson's the preferred bidders all those years ago. With no competition as a result, the council is powerless to control what happens. We now hear that Winchester College, who own the land, want more money now for the Barton Farm development. No one with any business experience would have gone this far without having first fixed the price. Yet another example of incompetence and naivety. Huge sums have been paid out for a Winnell consultation exercise. Surely this should have been done in-house. We pay our officials huge sums in salaries. But for what? That's from Keith Webb, Quarry Road, Winchester.
James Anderson writes, ambition in works. Sir, our MP Steve Bryan has complained recently that his seat on the morning train is to become smaller in the interests of providing more seats. With population rising by 1/3 of a million each year, the majority of that in the southeast, we all have to squeeze up and then up some more. Mr. Bryan might reflect on the expenditure on HS2 when the spend on the current network is patently inadequate. In similar contexts, Stephen Godfrey's speech on embracing change is something of a straw man argument, as the real debate is about how best to change, Chronicle December the 10th. For obvious reasons, urban development usually starts with a road layout, but not apparently in Winchester. Continuing to rely on Friars Gate and St George's as a funnel for general traffic is unsustainable, and the western orbit via Stockbridge Road and Romsey Road often resembles a car park, as evidenced by the gridlock last Friday afternoon. Our current city leadership is particularly focused on money, and rightly so, when it concerns service delivery issues. When it comes to the built environment, however, the concept of value for money becomes heavily nuanced. The current Friars Gate surgery and adjacent multi-storey, the buildings adjacent to the Chronicle offices and too much of St George's were certainly value for money, but only in the sense of utilitarian horrors. One vision of Silver Hill and St George as a second high street, of general traffic getting no closer than the Itchen at one end and Romsey Road station approach at the other, and of an effective orbital around which to plan the next generation of commerce and housing. It's not change that is the issue, but confidence in the plans, whether they are by local or central government. Stephen Godfrey is a splendid fellow whose heart is in the right place. Perhaps as he walks his dogs, he might let the vision soar a bit higher. This is from James Anderson of Wrights Close, South Wanston.
Ian Soresby writes about ideas for railway. Sir, the recent installation of yellow lines around Shawford Railway Station will no doubt come as a welcome relief to many residents. But restricting inappropriate parking does not solve the underlying problem and just forces commuters to park further from the station. Commuters, whether travelling the short distance to Winchester or all the way to London, should be encouraged to park and go by train. The more people that use Shawford Station, the more viable the service becomes, and more trains will be scheduled to stop there. Long term, there will never be enough parking at Shawford, even if the old station yard is converted from storage to parking. A short-term solution would be regular park-and-ride buses going from Winchester South Park and Ride. A better long-term solution would be to move the station half a mile north, where direct pedestrian access could be created from Winchester South Park and Ride, with footpath access also from Shawford. The new station by the Park and Ride, the Shawford or Winchester Parkway, overcomes all the problems of parking in Shawford and would reduce car journeys into Winchester by commuters driving to the station and parking there. This proposal fits well with current plans to redevelop the area around Winchester Station, with the barren land of car parks put to better use for new houses and businesses. Ian Salisbury, Churchfields, Twyford.
This letter is from Councillor Peter Edgar, Executive Member for Education, and it's entitled Funds for School. Sir, I would like to respond to some comments made in a previous article, Chronicle December the 3rd, regarding Hampshire County Council's support for Western Church of England Primary School. Over the past 4 years, the council has invested almost £400,000 in Western CE primary school's facilities to provide a new multi-purpose space, improve the play area for those in reception year, and to render the building. A further £25,000 has also been committed to resurface the playground areas used by years 1 to 6. With regard to the size of the school hall, I can confirm that the hall at Weston is of a similar size to that of the new Westgate Lower School. Following a request from Weston School, a scheme to provide an additional dining space was approved as part of the new multi-purpose area. With regard to rain leaks, I can confirm that we have received 2 reported roof leaks since January 2015, one of which was in fact excess water from overflowing downpipes during an episode of extremely heavy rainfall. The council provided support to the school to address both issues. To ensure the appropriate provision of primary school places in the central Winchester area, the council undertook detailed consultations with all the local schools, and the final decision was taken to provide the required spaces by creating an additional 60 places per year on the Westgate campus by creating our first 4 to 16 years in school. It should be noted that the council faces a significant maintenance challenge across the school estate, with a high proportion of our school buildings having been built in the 1960s and 1970s. More than 100 such buildings have been reclad in the last 20 years. A further 200 remain to be addressed. The current estimate of liability in the school's portfolio is £380 million, of which 2/3 are associated with school buildings built around 50 years ago. In the light of this liability, I trust readers will see that the County Council is supporting Weston School where it can, against a number of competing priorities and at a time of financial constraint. That's from Councillor Peter Edgar, Executive Member for Education.
Rodney Skinner writes this letter, which is headed Indication Risk. Sir, so the one-eyed monsters have come out of their summer hibernation. Or to put it another way, is there a shortage of car headlight and indicator bulbs? One would think so, with the number of cars with one headlight. Not only is it illegal, but it is dangerous, as approaching cars could think it's a motorcycle. As for indicators, do you know what that little lever on the steering column is for? Twice in the last month I've followed cars from the M3 exit at Bar End to Ropley, and only when one turned right at the anchor did it indicate. The other drove on and over the speed limit. In both cases, their lane discipline was non-existent. One had to guess which way they were going. One day we will guess wrong, and there will be an accident. So please get in the right lane and indicate. It's from Rodney Skinner, Town Close, Ropley, Alsford.
That concludes the letters to the editor. We now have items of historical interest, and we have them from 150 and 25 years ago.
100 years ago, on December the 18th, 1915, sun drops in. Sun is spelled S-O-N. Foil. Shortly before 11 o'clock on Sunday morning last, Flight Lieutenant Ashton Summers, elder son of Mr. F.B. Summers of Froyle Place, appeared over the village in a biplane. He soon, by skillful management, came down safely in a meadow at the back of the school. The incident attracted much attention, and quite a number of people walked over to view the machine. At 2 p.m., Mr. Summers, who was the only occupant, made a graceful ascent, and after some clever manoeuvring, sailed away in the direction of Aldershot.
This is from 50 years ago, December the 18th, 1965. Gale brings chaos. The gale on Thursday wreaked havoc all over Hampshire, bringing trees crashing down across roads and power and telephone lines, and the heavy rain caused many roads to be flooded. Stoneham Lane, near North Stoneham Church, was temporarily closed to traffic because of heavy flooding, and traffic faced difficulties at Oak Mount Road and Lee Road, Eastleigh, where the roads were underwater for some considerable time. Telephone and electricity board engineers were called to Horton Heath after a tree brought down both telephone and power lines, and some SEB repair teams were out all night making good the damage.
25 years ago, December the 14th, 1990. Get Saddam! In the interests of peace, the Allies now in the Gulf simply must succeed against Saddam Hussein, whether by sanctions or by the use of force, Mr. John Brown, MP for Winchester and Alton, said on Wednesday. If Saddam Hussein is not brought to book, we must ask ourselves what other pirates will follow, Mr. Brown said during a debate in the Commons. And he said that the former Prime Minister, Mr. Edward Heath, had called for more discussion, giving as an example an incident in the Cuban crisis of 1962.
Next, we have Chronicle comment, which will be followed by a letter from Westminster from Steve Bryan, and then a first person from Khalid Aziz.
The editorial comment has the headline, Is the region's care too big to manage? Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust has launched a damage limitation exercise following the extraordinary news that it failed to properly investigate more than 1,000 unexpected deaths of vulnerable people in its care. Its chief executive, Katrina Percy, has refused to resign, although the Trust has admitted some failings and said lessons have been learned. Health Secretary Jeremy Hunt, for whom Winchester MP Steve Bryan acts as Parliamentary Private Secretary, used unusually tough language in the House of Commons last week to brand Southern's failings as unacceptable. Of course, we have to wait until the official report is published and not rely on leaks. But should the report, once released, broadly reflect what is currently being reported, then it is hard to see how Mrs. Percy, who, after all, sets the tone and ethos of her organisation, can carry on in her job. She won Chief Executive of the Year in 2012, with the judges praising her leadership in, quote, allowing her managers to manage, unquote, with a minimum of bureaucracy. Time will tell if she, and as importantly, the Board of Governors, really have taken their eyes off the ball. This sorry episode raises questions about whether Southern Health, that provides mental health care across the region, is too big to be effectively managed.
This is Letter from Westminster, written by Steve Bryan, Winchester MP. I have no idea where the time went, but this is my final column of 2015, a year which has been eventful, exciting, tragic, and extremely hard work. Events in Iraq and Syria continue to dominate the national and international news. Voting for military action is the heaviest of responsibilities for any MP, and I am no different. Of course, bombing alone is not the answer, and I wouldn't support a strategy that said as much. It's become fashionable, nonetheless, to claim that is the government's position, and I refute that absolutely. The far-reaching Vienna process and the comprehensive strategy laid out by our Prime Minister is much more than what takes place from RAF jets, and that has to be right. Alongside the fight against Daesh, and of course one result thereof, is the tragic refugee crisis. I am proud Winchester is doing its bit, and the first Syrian families arrived in the city this month. I am due to meet them before Christmas and will, of course, be extending the warmest of Winchester welcomes. This year also saw the subject of assisted dying return to Parliament. My postbag has rarely seen an issue that has interested so many, and I read them all, as well as reading widely during my summer holes. The House spoke very clearly against in the end, but the debate itself was superb, carried out in the finest traditions on what was a free vote matter of conscience for MPs. As the year ends, we have the crucial Paris Climate Change Agreement. I think many, some even maybe correspondents with this newspaper, were sharpening their knives for our government in anticipating failure at this summit, but in the end we had a real result. The talks have culminated in a global deal between 195 countries, with every one of them now signed up to play its part in halting climate change. In other words, this generation has taken vital steps to ensure that our children and grandchildren will see that we did our duty in securing the future of our planet. Locally, we remain in limbo with the saga that is Silver Hill, and the lawyers continue to be the only winners, in my opinion. We should ask ourselves now which path is most likely to lead to the regeneration of this increasingly embarrassing part of our great city. Meanwhile, Barton Farm seems stuck in the mud, but it will resume, and whilst readers will know I was very much against this development, we must go ahead without delay as part of Winchester's signed-off local plan, not least because we have opportunities with this scheme, including the exciting new Barton Farm Academy School. Finally, May's general election was certainly a good moment for me. It was a real honour to be asked to represent this constituency once, but to do so again with such an increased majority and share of the vote was brilliant. It's been business as usual for the team and me ever since, and will be for the next 5 years. May I wish all readers a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Khalid Aziz writes, "A mix of tinsel and faith. Another week and it's Christmas. For observant Christians, it's an annual reinvigoration of their faith, kicking off a year of feast days with the celebration of the birth of Christ. Most others, indeed the vast majority of the population, is often nothing more than a welcome midwinter break, though mercifully the farcically named Winterval seems to have been quietly dropped by the desperate to be politically correct councils, who find in age of cuts they are now have other more pressing issues to worry about. In the hub of the universe that is St. Mary Bourne, the early indications of Christmas are already there. Last week we hosted the Christmas party for our extended family, 45 and counting, with another grandchild, mine, already visibly on the way and due in April. Much mirth and jollity to be had by all in a chaos of excellent food and excited small children, all sent into paroxysms of glee by the appearance of Father Christmas, brilliantly played every year by a brother-in-law who has perfected not only his girth but his walk too. Moving on, there will be carols in our 12th century church, candlelit and magical, with a sermon hopefully devoid of hellfire and brimstone. We seem to manage to create enough of that in the secular world these days. And more something to warm the soul and encourage us to greater kindness towards our fellow man. The service is traditionally followed by parties. Beer in the local pubs for some, champagne generously laid on in the home of a neighbour for others. Then there is the Works Christmas Do. This year the Aziz corporate team is going for supper at one of Winchester's finest restaurants, with taxis laid on for all to minimise the risk of mishap on the way home. It's amazing to think how Winchester nightlife has improved in the last 3 decades. When I arrived in 1962, there were just a couple of decent restaurants in Winchester. These days we are spoilt for choice. The service is better too. Our greatly expanded university supplies plenty of polite students to the catering trade. A case of gown serving town? Christmas can be relentless, and time to reflect is hard to find. But reflect we must, because I cannot think of a time when the world appears more out of joint, certainly not in my lifetime. We have refugees for whom Christmas will not appear to be much of a season of goodwill to all men. The issue of rough sleepers is still with us, even in the richest county and towns in the country. There will be great efforts made by the Trinity Centre and others to bring relief. As usual, charities will be doing their bit, with the two closest to my heart, Naomi House and Enham Trust, being very much open for business throughout the Christmas period. And yet for those whom life is much more generous, this is a time that can be most stressful of the year, with A&E and police services being alive to domestic violence, and divorce lawyers annually reporting January as their busiest month for new clients. And yet, in the majority of households, Christmas will remain a delightful mix of tinsel and faith, of excitement and thoughtfulness. As I write, Mrs. A is already in warp drive as she seeks to make our nearest and dearest, spurred on by the fact that we all have all children and grandchildren with us for Christmas Day. I shall insist, as always, that we pause at 3 p.m. for the Queen. But other than that, the day will be full of warmth and goodwill, which will evaporate if I don't get the cooking of the rib of beef right. I hope your day is as wonderful as we are planning for ours to be. Happy Christmas.
We don't have a what's on this week, but just a reminder that the cathedral, the carol services in the cathedral are on Monday, 21st of December at 6:30, and also on Tuesday, the 22nd of December, also at 6:30. And I'm told that the pantomime at the Theatre Royal is excellent, Jack and the Beanstalk this year, and that is on until the 3rd of January. So if you're interested in going, the box office number for the Theatre Royal for Jack and the Beanstalk is 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. Lighting up times. Today, Friday the 17th of December, sun rose at about 8:05 in the morning and will set at 4:00 in the afternoon, and very similar times on Wednesday of next week. Sunrise just after 8:05 in the morning and sunset at 4:00 in the afternoon. If you know of someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with your memory stick or your player, the person to contact is Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. There's a laminated card with this information inside each wallet should you need it, but please leave the card inside the wallet when you return it. There will be no talking newspaper next week, which of course is Christmas Day, nor the following week, the Friday, of course, being New Year's Day. So our next recording will be on Friday, the 8th of January. We now move on to items of general news interest.
No improvement needed at school. So says Ofsted inspectors as they rate a Winchester sixth form college as outstanding. Peter Simmons College was praised by inspectors who noted it, quote, provided an environment where learners can grow in confidence and independence and seeks to develop well-rounded, open-minded individuals with ambitious goals, unquote. Principal Stephen Carville was immensely proud of the college, and the report showed that they can do what they can do. He added, while the inspection took place because we have boarding students, it explored all aspects of the college, from the outstanding student results to the high quality facilities and the college's excellent pastoral care. The boarding students are a hugely important aspect of the college, and Andy Pond, head of boarding, and his team work hard to ensure that the experience of boarding is a happy and successful one. We are no strangers to inspection. In fact, Ofsted have in various ways visited us no less than 15 times in the last 11 years, and they have never found us to be anything other than outstanding. And Mr. Carville added, this report really is remarkable, though. There is not a single weakness or recommendation for improvement in the entire report. Andy Pond, head of boarding, said, it is very reassuring to see that the Ofsted inspection report endorses the positive environment we offer to boarding students, and the provision of a safe and secure living space means that the students can direct their energies into their studies. Our boarders are very much involved in all aspects of college life, though from competing in the college's sports team to being actively involved in, helping at, and organising charity fundraising events such as cake sales and marshalling at Bournemouth Race for Life. Many of the boarders come from families living in the Falkland Islands or from service families.
Teen pageant delight as sisters make cut. Two Winchester teenage sisters are celebrating after winning places in the semi-finals of two prestigious beauty contests. Mari Jade, 17, and Marley Cooper, 14, from Stanmore, have been chosen from thousands of teenagers in the Miss Teen Great Britain and Miss Junior Teen Great Britain competitions. Their mother, Tina Cooper, saw details of the prestigious pageant on the Facebook page of Tulip Model Agency, which they're both signed up to, and thought it may be worth a try. Marley, who attends Henry Beaufort Secondary School, was the first to find out she was through, and 4 days later, Mari Jade, who studies at Peter Simmons Sixth Form College, was stunned to find out she was also chosen. Ms. Cooper said, I didn't think they would get this far. I thought, send the photos off and see what they say. I'm really proud of them getting through. If they get through to the final, it'll be amazing for them. It is something huge to get through to a final to something like this, because it's like a mini version of Miss World. The pair will also be raising funds for charity as part of getting through to the semi-final. Mari Jade and Marley's chosen charity is Together for Short Lives, which helps children diagnosed with long-term or terminal illness.
Equality Trailblazer marks 100th birthday. A pioneer of equality between the sexes has celebrated her 100th birthday. Air Commodore retired Dame Felicity Hill marked the milestone last Saturday at the Dower House Nursing Home in Headbourne Worthy. Dame Felicity was the RAF's first female Air Commodore after the WAF became the WRAF. When asked what message she would give to the personnel of the RAF today, she said, I believe that women in the RAF are still considered equal, as we were, and more so now as we have women fighter and helicopter aircrew, a remarkable achievement compared to my day. Since 1939, the RAF has regarded women as capable as men to do the job and have carried out that on into the RAF today. So it was a very good career for women then and is still the same today. In recognition of Dame Felicity's being the RAF's first female Air Commodore in 1966, Air Vice Marshal Sue Gray surprised her at the party and presented her with a bouquet. AVM Gray said, I was delighted to be asked to attend Dame Felicity's 100th birthday on behalf of the RAF. Her achievement set a precedent that many women like myself have been able to follow. Women can reach the top in any trade with the RAF thanks to women like Dame Felicity, she added. Dame Felicity joined the then 1,734-strong WAF at Farnborough Aerodrome in 1939 and served until 1969. The Navy were unable to process her application fast enough, so she joined the RAF along with her friends. Dame Felicity was lucky that the man in charge of height measuring was sympathetic, because she was half an inch short of the required height. He read out her height with the requisite half inch added. I probably should never have got in, she laughed. She became an equipment assistant under the eye of Sergeant Barrett, a redhead with the temper to match, who thought we were la-di-da females who would sit on the counter and chat up the equipment officer. He banned them to menial jobs in the stores. The sergeant eventually realised he needed Dame Felicity and her friend's help up front, and they both came to know the joys of triplicate paperwork, issuing anything from pants to revolvers. She failed her first officer's board in 1940 because she was too young, at the age of 23. However, she was promoted to corporal and became an entrance instructor at West Drayton. Early entrants, such as Dame Felicity, who showed leadership potential, soon moved up the promotion ladder. After officer promotion, I was posted to RAF Whiten, a bomber station where I experienced my first military funeral. One of our bombers limped back and crashed just short of the airfield.
Police chief to leave county. Hampshire's top police officer is to leave the force for a new job. Chief Constable Andy Marsh will take over the top job at Avon and Somerset Constabulary after 3 years in the role. He was confirmed in the new role on Monday and will move to the West Country next year, saying it will allow him to be closer to his family. It would bring to an end a 5-year spell at Hampshire Constabulary, which Mr. Marsh joined as Deputy Chief Constable in 2010. He was then promoted to Chief Constable in early 2013, becoming the first to be appointed to the role by the new Police and Crime Commissioner, Simon Hayes. It means a return to the force for Mr. Marsh, who first joined it in 1987 and served as Assistant Chief Constable in 2009 to 2010. In a message to staff at Hampshire Constabulary, Mr. Marsh thanked them for their warmth, support, and ongoing dedication to keeping vulnerable people from harm, saying that their efforts have been second to none. He also thanked Mr. Hayes for his support, and added that Hampshire has a very high public confidence compared with other forces, saying, I understand that some of you might feel disappointed at my decision to put my name forward for this new role, but for 6 years I have lived away from home. So when this opportunity came to spend more time with my family, it was something that I could not turn down. Subject to my selection being confirmed on Monday, I will leave behind a strong team with the dedication and ambition to keep our communities safe during what is an exciting era for policing with many new challenges. Mr. Hayes will now be in charge of finding Hampshire's next Chief Constable, although no formal timetable has yet been agreed. He praised Mr. Marsh's significant contribution to protecting our communities from harm, adding, he has guided the organisation to operational policing, introducing innovation and modernisation. And as Andy would not be leaving us immediately, there is time to plan for the future. And I'm sure that should he be confirmed at the helm early next year, Avon and Somerset will flourish with Andy at as their Chief Constable. I wish him and his family all the best in the future, added Mr. Hayes.
Hard-working families rewarded by round table. They are the Christmas gifts that have given some early festive cheer for the needy. Members of Winchester Round Table have been busy wrapping hampers for hard-working families in need of a welcome boost. The 45 customised hampers were given to families and carers across the city. Each contained festive food, presents and gifts, including toys from the Entertainer toy shop in the Brooks Shopping Centre. Connor Gately, chairman of the Winchester Round Table, said, "It's about saying thank you to those people who may not get a thank you. The reason we do this is because it's a great way for Winchester Round Table to support the community and bring the Christmas cheer to well-deserving families and children in Winchester. The revenue to pay for the hampers comes from the annual fireworks display at North Walls Recreation Ground, which the Round Table organises and which attracted around 20,000 people.
Gas appliance safety plea. Residents in Hampshire are being urged to check their gas appliances to make sure they are safe from a deadly substance. Hampshire County Council is calling for people to check gas appliances to ensure they are carbon monoxide safe in an effort to reduce incidents, fatalities and ill health. Carbon monoxide is a toxic, colourless and odourless gas produced by faulty or badly installed gas appliances. It is known as the silent killer because it cannot be seen, smelt or tasted. Symptoms of carbon monoxide poisoning include drowsiness, headaches, nausea and breathlessness. Serious poisoning can be fatal and lead to long-term neurological effects. Patricia Stallard, County Council Executive Member for Health and Public Health, said, "Every year in the UK, a small number of people sadly lose their lives to this silent killer, but there are simple steps people can take to help protect themselves. Ensuring the gas appliances are properly fitted and regularly serviced by gas-safe engineers. Only use a gas-safe registered engineer to fix or service appliances. Always check their gas-safe register ID card, get appliances serviced and safety checked every year and fit a carbon monoxide alarm. If you think there may be a gas leak, or you notice signs of carbon monoxide, get fresh air immediately, switch off the appliance and call the National Gas Emergency Number on 0800 111 999. I'll read that again, 0800 111 999. If you feel unwell, go to a GP or hospital immediately.
Ex-shop proposal. A Winchester shop, abandoned for over a decade, is set to be converted into flats and new retail space. Units at 158 to 159 High Street, next to Alfie's Pub, will be brought back to life by the firm behind Silver Hill in a bid to attract upmarket retailers. The City of Winchester Trust said it was shocked at the state of the listed Georgian building and welcomed the sensitively developed plans. The dividing wall between the two units will be demolished to create a single shop served by a new two-storey rear extension. Two flats will be fitted on the first floor. It comes after the site was first bought by Henderson UK Property Fund, a subsidiary of Silver Hill developer TH Real Estate. The firm said it aims to attract high-end retailers to this underutilised area of the High Street. The City of Winchester Trust said it was delighted to see proposals to refurbish this listed building on a key site in the High Street and was shocked to see its current dilapidated state.
Pupils win prizes for posters. Children at a junior school near Winchester will see their posters promoting health and safety appear across the south. Their creations will be put up at building sites after a competition. Youngsters at Stockbridge Primary School will have their posters put up at Drew Construction Group's construction sites after they visited Rosalind Hill House Sheltered Housing Complex earlier this year. Drew Construction Group Marketing Manager Katie Cull visited the Old London Road School to announce the winners of their contest, Jace, Amelie and Bethany, all in Year 6. Katie said, "The efforts of the pupils were outstanding, so Drew had a hard task of selecting just three winners. However, the winners were presented with book tokens and the posters are now displayed on several Drew sites, including those in Bournemouth and Portsmouth. Well done to all the pupils at Stockbridge Primary School."
Boomtown, how city draws tourist masses. There's more to Winchester's burgeoning tourist trade than where Santa parks his lorry. There's the visit of the world's most remarkable truck. Big crowds. But the city is already one of Hampshire's most desired destinations. Savvy marketing, grassroots creativity and a rise in domestic holidays are among the reasons why crowds come throughout the year, according to tourism chiefs. They are harnessing everything from guided tours to cheese to add to the 5.5 million who visit for the day last year. Visitors spent more than a million nights in Winchester's hotels and bed and breakfasts in 2014, spending £75 million. The average stay lasted three nights, according to Tourism South East. Every area measured has spiked by at least 15% since 2012, with value to local businesses estimated to be up by 35% to £350 million. However, not everyone is sure that Winchester is big enough to cope. Residents and countless small businesses have complained over the years that roads and car parks are sagging under the pressure, especially at Christmas. The problems have been compounded this year by the closure of Friarsgate Car Park and delays to the new park and ride facility at Pitt. Hold-ups at Bovis Homes building the scheme as part of its Pitt Manor housing estate have meant that the 200 new spaces were not ready for Christmas as planned. They are now set to launch in January. Meanwhile, this week, Justice Jewellers have complained to the City Council over vehicles and stalls blocking access to Parchment Street, where independent firms have struggled to attract shoppers. Director Don Quayle said his trade was hit on Sunday by the blockages. He said, "Customers have been unable to make pre-arranged meetings with us and have cancelled as the town is near gridlocked over Friday and the weekend. I question exactly how beneficial the Christmas market is that the majority of traders are from outside the area. The majority of visitors are from outside the area, and our regular customers now choose to shop away from Winchester, as shopping is now an unpleasant experience over the weekend." Winchester's regional pull is not just for Christmas, however. The calendar is now peppered with diverse festivals and events, with more to come, including a cocktail festival in 2016. Ellen Simpson, Winchester City Council's head of tourism, said, "In 2008 we sat around the table with five festivals, and now we sit around the table with something in the region of 13 to 15. There's comedy, fashion, the guitar festival, wine, the cheese and chilli festival. There's this groundswell that's from the creative community. We put a great deal into the creative industry, and they're creating more reasons to come and see what's going on." Winchester City Council is also trying to harness the district's creative talent with the development of a new enterprise centre in Bar End. The former railway unit will act as a beacon for talented graduates from the University and School of Art who could put on the hat fairs and festivals of the future. Winchester Cathedral's widely celebrated Christmas market accounts for a sizeable chunk of the day trippers, with its estimated 400,000 shoppers in 2014 accounting for 7% of the visitors over the entire year. On Sunday, queues for the park and ride shuttle stretched hundreds of metres around the Broadway and Colebrook Street. Visitors spent £274,000 in Winchester in 2014, with 70% of that cash being splashed in a single day. The cathedral expects a particularly busy trade and is rolling out extra stewards to cope with the footfall. Councillor James Byrne, portfolio holder for local economy, tourism and parking, said the city is prepared for bigger crowds. "Since 2008, when money became a lot tighter for everyone, people were tending to vacation at home more. And I think Winchester has always been a very good grab on that market for domestic holidays," he said. "We punch far above our weight when it comes to our cultural offering, and that's why people want to come here. I think that's why Coca-Cola wanted to come here, because Winchester is where it's at."
portraits stored, Winchester's hospital chief has defended the decision to put historic paintings into storage. Valerie Stutchbury, aged 85, a former worker at the RHCH from Chandler's Ford, is campaigning to restore portraits of key figures to their former glory at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. But displaying the 19th century frames would increase the risk of infection, said Mary Edwards, chief executive of Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust. She said, "They are beautiful paintings, but they would not be suitable to be in any area that our infection control team would have concerns about because they can't be washed or cleaned. If you look in most corridors or in clinical areas where there are pictures, they've normally got plastic frames over them." The Trust plans an open day next year where the public can view the paintings and artifacts, including antique medical equipment.
Older driver praise. A Hampshire police initiative has been praised for its efforts to improve road safety. Hampshire Older Drivers Forum was highly commended by Prince Michael of Kent at the annual Road Safety Awards at the Savoy Hotel in London. The forum was created in June 2013, following a head-on collision involving an elderly driver travelling the wrong way on a dual carriageway near Basingstoke, killing a 28-year-old. Sergeant Rob Hurd of Hampshire Constabulary, founder and chairman of the Older Drivers Forum, said, "I am extremely proud that the great work of the forum has been recognised. We need to embrace and celebrate the older generation and support those who wish to continue driving, but also give advice when it's time to retire. We know older motorists have a wealth of experience, confidence and tolerance. However, sight, hearing, reaction time and judgment of speed and distance may not be as sharp as it once was." In Hampshire, the number of people aged 70 or over involved in collisions has declined, even though the number of older drivers has increased. Serious injuries caused by drivers aged 70 plus have reduced by 11% since the forum was set up. Sergeant Hurd added, "Fragility increases with age, so injuries tend to be more serious and recovery takes much longer. Casualty rates do increase for car drivers aged over about 65, and the fatality rate increases significantly. That's where we come in. The Older Drivers Forum is about keeping mature motorists on the road safely for longer. Whether that's giving practical and informative help to continue driving or pointing you in the right direction for an assessment to identify your driving needs, from wing mirror adapters to an elevated driving seat, we are here to help. We're a non-profit organisation made up of experts in road safety from across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, from representatives from the emergency services to charities, local authorities and businesses specialising in keeping older people on the road. Hampshire's Older Drivers Forum has been recognised nationally, with many of its ideas and work rolling out across the country. Sergeant Hurd is now a member of the National Older Drivers Task Force, where he is chair of a committee looking at self-help and support for older drivers.
Vintage buses on January the 1st. Vintage buses will return to Winchester streets on New Year's Day. The Friends of King Alfred buses are running a downsized version of the traditional event. The Friends of King Alfred buses decided last year to hold its main day in May, when the ageing vehicles are less prone to mechanical breakdown in cold weather. This year it'll be on April the 30th and May the 1st. So the journeys that will be available on the 1st of January are between the Broadway and Stanmore, to Maughan Hill, to Sparsholt, to Crawley, to Worthy Down, Taplings Road, Oslebury, Sunnydown Road and Springvale.
Railway shelter wins national award. A railway shelter evoking the history of the Watercress Line has won a national prize for the volunteers who spent nearly a year assembling it. The new structure at Rompuy Station was hailed by judges at the National Railway Heritage Trust Awards. Volunteers spent 5,000 hours on the project and delighted bosses by delivering it 2 weeks early and under budget. Designed by architect and Midhant Railway volunteer Adrian Creese in the style of the other buildings on the line, the shelter uses decorative cast iron columns and arches from Ringwood Station, which closed in 1967. Presenting the Volunteers Award, Lord Faulkner of Worcester said the project was an object lesson in how these projects should be carried out. Stephanie Crowther, chairman of the Midhants Railway Preservation Society, said, "We are absolutely delighted with the award. It is a fitting testament to the skill and dedication of our volunteers. In our 150th year, it is exciting to be bringing new projects to fruition, especially when they come in on time and under budget." She added, "Their accomplishment is so perfect that many visitors have mistaken it for a renovation, and they should be justly proud." A commemorative plaque marking the award will be unveiled at the station on the line between Alresford and Alton later in 2016.
Singer launches new EP at hometown show. Nearly 200 people welcomed one of Winchester's most promising young singers home on Friday for a gig to launch his new EP. Josh Savage has been travelling the living rooms of Europe on a 43-date tour and used his new showmanship to entertain the audience at Winchester Guildhall. The former Westgate School and Peter Simmons College student performed with his sister Ania, a string quartet, and fellow local musicians for the emotional homecoming. He said, "It still hasn't sunk in, I'm just lost for words, really. I wasn't expecting there to be that many people and the crowd to be that appreciative and attentive." Living room shows are great because you can actually see the audience and interact with them a lot more. That's definitely helped me be a lot more interactive with the audience. Most of the audience sat in comfy chairs and at tables. The evening was filmed by Winchester director Duncan Felix, who followed Savage on tour this autumn. The filmmaker was originally planning a documentary about the singer, but is now making a general piece about the growing trend of living room gigs. Savage is the founder of the southern branch of So Far Sounds, which organises intimate house performances for up-and-coming artists.
Congestion caused by waiting for spaces. Christmas brings sparkling lights, roasted chestnuts, and of course, traffic. The volume of cars in the city has reached a peak point. There's a photograph here of the Friarsgate Road, completely empty of cars, apart from those queuing for the two car parks, so no traffic can get through past them. One traffic warden who asked not to be named said that people want to park within the city. You tell them about the South Winchester Park and Ride and they say, "No, it's too far. I'd rather wait for a space in the city." It's just mad because they're blocking up the roads.
Drugs trigger suicide. A young Winchester man who suffered hallucinations heightened by legal highs hanged himself in his parents' bathroom, an inquest heard. Charlie Brzakalik, age 20, was dealt toxic substances which aggravated his paranoid schizophrenia and voices in his head, a court was told on Tuesday. He was found dead by his mother, Julie, on September the 25th at the family home in Hambledon Road, Denmead. The Winchester inquest was told how Mr. Brzakalik's mental state suffered after moving from the house last year to a flat in Forder Court, St. Cross Road. He was prescribed psychotic medication and became homesick earlier this year, the hearing was told.
Developer lights up town. A housing developer has chosen to spread Christmas cheer by sponsoring Bishop Wolfson's Christmas lights for another year. David Wilson Homes chose to help make the market town merry and bright for its annual lighting display. Local residents were encouraged to get in the festive spirit as the lights were officially switched on Friday, December the 4th. This will be the third year that David Wilson Homes has sponsored the lights as it continues its commitment to the local community. Anthony Dimmick, spokesman at David Wilson Homes, said, "The Christmas lights across the town are a beautiful Yuletide addition, and we hope it spreads a lot of joy this winter to the local residents. We are thrilled we can support such a fun community event, which marks the start of the official countdown to Christmas."
Force in 108 jobs drive. Hampshire Constabulary is set for its biggest employment boost in 5 years. Police and Crime Commissioner Simon Hayes has revealed that they will be investing £5.5 million to employ 108 new officers. The plan will see the biggest influx of officers joining the force since 2010 in a bid to provide more support in the country's rural and urban areas. All 108 positions will be directed towards the Hampshire neighbourhood sector. Mr Hayes said the recruitment is because of the government spending review. He said the force is relieved that it won't be hit by another £12.5 million budget cut, meaning they can use the police savings to invest in staff. The force is also considering strengthening its firearms unit in the wake of the growing terror threat. Mr Hayes said this is very positive. Previous cuts have put an intolerable strain on policing across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. I believe Hampshire Constabulary has done its bit for austerity, and we are now going to bring in the new officers as soon as possible. Mr Hayes said they are hoping to put out adverts for the new jobs in the coming weeks. The force expects officers to start training and then to join the force in the new year.
Farming couple in appeal. A farming couple being forced to bulldoze their huge mobile home after allegedly flouting planning laws have taken their case to appeal. Robert and Linda Barnett fear they will be made homeless and lose their business over the use of their roof space if Winchester City Council insists on demolition. The couple of Park Place Nurseries, Wickham, were authorised to build a 6-foot-high log cabin in 2013, with the attic used for storage. But a row began when planning officers raised concerns that it would be lived in. The Barnetts are appealing orders to demolish the home. In an email seen by the Chronicle ward councillor, Therese Evans said, "I agree with the enforcement notice. The mobile home is huge, and its height has greatly concerned residents." Mr. Barnett said, "For us in particular, apart from losing everything we've worked for over many years and the tremendous amount of stress it has put on us, it will mean closing our farm."
Laptop boost for Ghana. Students at a Winchester school went on a trip of a lifetime to Ghana. The students at the Westgate helped two Ghanaian schools improve their ICT resources by taking 27 refurbished laptops donated by Hampshire County Council. The laptops would enable pupils in the school to have practical computing lessons. Previously, ICT lessons were theory only, with pupils having to learn the moves and keys of a computer from a book and the blackboard. Now classes will have access to shared laptops and be able to practice their keyboard skills and use software packages for real. The Westgate School also raised £1,000, which was used to pay for the materials for windows and doors to finish two kindergarten classrooms, which can now be used so the classes are not held outside. The group also helped render the outside of the classrooms and screed another classroom floor.
Jewellers Gurkha fundraise. A Winchester jeweller is maintaining a long family link by supporting a Gurkha charity. Jeremy France's father served in Nepal and worked with the Gurkha soldiers. The independent jeweller has recently held two events to support the Queen's own Gurkha Logistic Regiment with two events. He hosted the annual Christmas champagne evening with his high street shop and workshops transformed with the Gurkha theme. Lance Corporal Roman, a Gurkha piper decked out in traditional tartan, drew a crowd of passers-by from Winchester High Street. Last Saturday, Mr. France and two of his design staff, James Rudge and Emma Holloway, attended an event at the Gurkha Museum in Winchester, hosted by retired Lieutenant Colonel Paul Gillam. It featured the presentation of three commissioned paintings to the museum, as well as recognising the donations made to Gurkha charities. Mr. France presented a cheque for £1,000 to Major General Angus Fay, a donation to the Queen's own Gurkha Logistic Regiment Trust that was raised entirely at his champagne event's Diamond Raffle. He said, "I spent a large part of my childhood and teenage years growing up in Nepal, whilst my late father, a Royal Engineer, served 2 3-year tours in Duran, East Nepal, recruiting young Gurkha soldiers. I quickly grew to admire and respect the Nepalese people, especially the Gurkhas. It has been an absolute pleasure to take part in raising both money and awareness."
Charity concert. Three hospices got an early Christmas present. A mass concert at Kempton Park Racecourse raised £25,000, which will be shared among five hospices in the south. The event, organised by the Voices for Hospices Choir, saw more than 40 choirs and individuals singing The Armed Man, a mass for peace. Countess Mountbatten Hospice, Naomi House and Jack's Place, and Oakhaven Hospice Trust are all set to receive a share of the money.
Firefighters welcome at Hub. Winchester's new police hub is welcome news to firefighters as well as local bobbies. Members of the city's fire station will be allowed to visit Mottisfont Court's operational headquarters and relax in the Beeston Recreation Room, which was commissioned by the Beeston Trust. The Trust originally donated money to the old station at North Walls so officers could have a place to relax during their breaks whilst on duty, and the room has been reintroduced at Tower Street. The money has been used to buy items such as a dining table and chairs and a pool table. Also, boasting a gym in the basement, officers can use the newly renovated all-purpose building for all their off-duty needs. Opened by Hampshire Police and Crime Commissioner Simon Hayes on November the 16th, it was previously owned by Hampshire County Council and cost £4.5 million to renovate, with the money coming from the selling of other police-owned assets. The relocation was part of the PCC's estate strategy, which has seen the constabulary cut £55 million in the last 4 years.
Festival celebrates creativity. Youngsters across Winchester are being invited to help organise a new festival celebrating their creative talents. Children will have the chance to get creative at workshops, while over 14s will design, market and manage performances. COW Fest, that's the Children of Winchester Festival, will be based at the Tower Arts Centre at King's School on February the 13th and 14th. Winchester Sport, Art and Leisure Trust, otherwise known as SALT, is encouraging volunteers for logo and flyer design, programme writing and layout, art gallery arrangement and stage management. Front of house roles such as decorating venues, supporting workshop providers and selling tickets are also need to be filled. SALT Chief Executive Emma Back said, "The aim of COW Fest is to showcase local talent and bring new audiences to Winchester's youth arts providers, and also to give children a chance to have a go at different creative activities through the workshops. Local young people can get involved in planning and marketing to this festival too."
Celebrating the history and development of university. Principals, past and present, came together at Winchester University to celebrate the launch of a new book charting its 175-year history. History professor Tom Bowman James has documented the institution's journey from a Church of England teacher training college to an accredited university. The illustrated volume shows how Winchester Diocesan Training School, founded in 1840, migrated around the city in its early years, occupying buildings including the Bishop of Winchester's Palace at Wolsey. Professor James then charted the construction of the main building in 1862, transformation into King Alfred's College in 1928, and the University of Winchester in 2005. It has been fascinating to follow the institution's growth and development over its 175-year history, Professor James said. Vice Chancellor Joy Carter was joined at the launch by Professor James and her predecessors, Paul Light and Marshall Rose. She said, "From humble beginnings, the university has blossomed into a world-leading institution committed to value-driven education."
Red panda moves into college. An endangered species has taken up residence at a Hampshire college, helping students discover more about how to care for them. Staff and students at Sparsholt College are excited at the arrival of Maya, an 18-month-old red panda who has moved into the Animal Management Centre. Maya joins the college's collection of more than 1,000 animals from 200 species. She takes up home in the red panda enclosure, which was previously home to the elderly residents Kiki and Ling, who died recently. Advanced level animal management students will work with Maya, carrying out husbandry tasks including feeding, cleaning and providing nutrition such as bamboo. It's a bit of a difference. They have also redeveloped the college's panda enclosure by erecting a new feeding station to allow for easier observation when Maya is eating. Maya, a male panda, comes from Drusillus Park in East Sussex. One of two males born in June 2014, he was initially mistaken for a female, hence his feminine-sounding name. His brother is called Anmar. The two names come from Myanmar, that's Burma as was, one of the countries in the Far East where red pandas originate. Slightly larger than a domestic cat, red panda are classified as endangered wild animals. The college requires a zoo license to keep them at the premises, and there are strict protocols when working with them. It is estimated that there are fewer than 10,000 mature red panda in the wild.
Well, on that rather delightful story, brings to an end our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, who were Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase, and to our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, Margot Meredith.
Goodbye and a happy Christmas.
John Richards.
Goodbye, happy Christmas from me too.
Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye from me and a happy new year.
Yeah, and from me, John Parker, goodbye too. And on behalf of all of us at the Talking Newspaper, we wish you a very, very happy Christmas and send our very best wishes for the new year. Please return your memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope. And a further reminder, just that our next recording will be on Friday, the 8th of January, so that's in 3 weeks' time.